It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
All right, welcome to Money for Lunch. Man, am I excited. We're going to get right into the show with my first guest, Dan Negroni. Dan Negroni is the founder and CEO of Coach and Consult of Launchbox, a company of experts in cross-generational issues working with organizations to bridge the gap between managers and their Gen Y workforce to increase employee engagement, productivity, innovation, and profits. Dan is a professional coach and keynote speaker for today's cross-generational issues and the author of Chasing Relevance, 6 Steps to Understand, Engage, and Maximize Next Generation Leaders in the Workplace. Dan Negroni, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you for having me. That's always good to have money for lunch.
It's the best. Money for lunch is the best. It's kind of a fun thing. I probably should have called it business for lunch my thinking was, you know, when a bunch of entrepreneurs get together, sooner or later we're talking about business, and business is usually about money. And so I thought I would just get it down to its essence, money for lunch. But probably business for lunch would have been a good way to go. Either way, I'm glad you're here. I'm glad to be talking about what you do and your book. And so let me ask you this, Dan. What prompted you? What was the inspiration behind writing this book?
Yeah, I mean, pretty clearly in my personal life, I had millennials at home. One is off the payroll, one soon to be off the payroll, and one just coming into his own. So I was dealing really with the issue of growing millennials at home and figuring out how to tell them, how to help them be their best selves, how to articulate their value, how to come of age, and how to connect with the other generations. And at work, I was doing the same thing. We had lots of employees, thousands, over half of them were millennials. And for crying out loud, I could not communicate with them. And I just could not figure out how do we bridge this communication gap to create where youth and experience meet to create money for lunch, breakfast, and dinner, but money and results for our businesses. And in order to do so, it was clear to me that with 83 million millennials in the U.S. alone, 2.4 billion in the world, them controlling most of the spend in our world and only growing, we needed to understand them.
Yes. Absolutely, absolutely. And I like the way you said that, getting off the payroll. And that's actually kind of nice. I calling it payroll almost makes it sound like, that there's a profit somewhere in there. Maybe there is. I was just like, always like calling it getting off the, the teat there. We have three that are gone and two left, so we're down to we're getting down to the last couple of there, so we're excited as well.
One of the things that strikes me when you say that is that parenting and having employees is so close to the same thing. And, they both are costly and they both are cost centers. And the question is, not only in the workplace, how do you make profit out of those employees, but how do you teach those young people that leave the nest how to create profit and give back to the world and, do something useful and learn how to make a living? So they're so intertwined, which is really the reason to write the book. Yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, let's talk about this because, aren't we making too much about organizations embracing the millennials and working with millennials? I mean, walk me through this. I mean, bottom line is millennials, like all generations, have to get a job. They have to keep that job. They have to move up in that job. Isn't it incumbent on the millennials working with the company and their leaders versus the other way around? Am I missing something?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. Yes and no is the answer to the question. Typical lawyer in my early career, I was one, so I'll answer it with yes and no. Look, here's the deal. In order to grow great businesses, both sides of the equation need to care more, right? They need to care more about teaching if you're a manager or you're a boss or you're someone that owns a business. And if you're a millennial, you need to care more about learning. But either way, you need to care more about people and you need to care more about how you treat them to make a difference. And I think millennials have pushed us and society has been pushed to really look at what are the tools that make better people in the workplace. And now they're inextricably woven between personal and professional. And we old people have a really difficult time as it shifts and migrates to thinking about the whole person, because back in our day, we would have never done that. Back in our day, we did everything ourselves. We didn't have any mentors. We learned everything ourselves, and we would have never, ever spoken back. Well, the problem is it's not back in our day, and it's only getting more different relative to technology. So we could whine and complain about what we did in our day, or we can become more relevant to the future. And that's what I'm saying. And that requires caring more about each other. You know, in the most divisive world ever, look at politics, look what's going on, look at how we speak to each other. We just need to cut the stuff and cut the bull and kind of focus on how do we help each other from both sides and not whose responsibility is. It's both, clearly.
Yes, clearly. I like the way you said that. And you're right. We could have, you know, living in our day has no relevance today. I mean, you know, no millennial, no, you know, Generation Y or Generation X, they really don't care about what we did in our day. Just like we didn't care when our parents was telling, were telling us, right? I mean, it's like, who cares? You're old. So you're right. I think both sides need to come together and figure it out. Let's talk about this.
Well, I would say this. Let's not throw away the whole past. There's context.
Right.
There are lessons we've learned. And all the lessons that we've learned that relate to people and motivation and accountability and awareness and getting the job done, those things still exist, right? How we do that is different, right? So, for example, now parents don't have to call all the other parents to get their kids to a place. The kids just connect with Uber and they get to where they're going, and you don't even know where you're going if you're where your kids are going if you're a parent, unless you get the beep right from Uber.
Right.
But it's the how that's different. It's not the what. Being human beings and building relationships is still necessary, whether we like it or not. And I think that's a good thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So let me ask you about this, because this is the other, what's the word I'm looking for? I guess complaint, for lack of better terms. And I don't know if it's, to me, I don't find this necessarily to be true. I have not experienced this problem any more with millennials than I have with any other generation, including our generation. But I want to get your thoughts on this, because millennials supposedly have a poor reputation for dependency versus accountability. And a lot of that is put on their parents, because their parents have supported them and cheered them on. What lines are being blurred when it comes to business leaders, responsibility for coaching and mentoring these younger generations? Walk me through your thinking.
Yeah, great question. So look, here's the deal. If you want to have a great business and you look at the great businesses and the businesses millennials want to buy from as consumers and they want to work for, they're the businesses that care about people. They're the businesses that teach millennials. They are the Googles. They are the Facebooks. They are the Apples. They are the Boxes. They are the people that get it. And there are Slalom Consulting. And there's lots of great core businesses that still get it too, the businesses that care about people. And so those are the businesses that are succeeding. And millennials, they want the same thing as consumers and as employees. So let's get that straight. So the question is this: are they entitled? Is the big E word true? Are they very different from us? Do they want everything done from themselves? And the answer is some do and most don't. Just like every generation, there are people like that.
Sure.
And so, there's a bunch of myths. Just like I'm an Xer on the cusp of being a boomer, and, they say we're not flexible. We don't like technology. We're stuck in our old ways, right? So there are myths on both sides of the equation, and just it's like enough already. I got a headache from it. Stop. Let's start to lean in and figure out how we work together to understand each other so each side brings their best to the table. Now, the rules of the game, don't get me wrong. People need to come to work when they say they're going to come to work. People need to do what they need to do. People need to deliver value to their customers and make it about the customers 24/7, right? I mean, those rules don't go away. However, the talk track, the negative sound bites is just, it's a waste of time.
Yeah, and I agree with you. Again, my experience is I have found millennials, again, just like any other generation I've hired and fired and trained, to be about the same. Anyway, so let's just move on from that. I want to get your thoughts on this. In the book, you kind of alluded this already in our conversation, in the book you argue quite a bit about caring leadership leads to results in health and thoughtfulness, productivity, and you talk about this balance, connection, collaboration, and stuff like that. Talk about this approach. Why do you approach this particular generation this way?
Well, first of all, they look, here's the deal. They want more because we've pushed them to want more. They know what we didn't, right? We didn't know what we didn't know when we were coming of age, and they know everything because they see everything, and technology is the big changer. So it is different. The rapidity of change, the disruption, we can use every overused word, the pivoting that happens, the way economies are changing, businesses like Airbnb and Uber and all these other businesses coming and popping up that are different shared economy type. The world is changing, and it is different, and that is different, and they did grow up as digital natives. That all being said, we're human beings. The number one work-life skill, we believe, is the ability to build relationships and caring. It'll show you EQ eats IQ for lunch, right? Because information you can find now. EQ, which is emotional intelligence, learning how to deal with people, delivering value to them, understanding what they want, and then giving it to them. That's where we rule. And we're doing a really poor job of teaching that in grade school, high school, college, business school, and in the workplace. And caring is teaching that. It's teaching people how to get along. Instead, we do a really good job of telling everybody how bad they suck, right, or what's wrong with them. But we don't do enough of this coming together and caring. And I think it's pretty clear that if you care about millennials in the workplace and you train them accordingly, they will deliver for you. It's that simple, because the number one thing they care about is capability, learning and growing to be better. And they're pushing us to push them more, and they want to be better than us. And what's wrong with that? That's good. That's good evolution.
Absolutely.
And so,
what's interesting to me here is that, Dan, is that this, I think, is applicable to all generations, right? I mean, generation wouldn't want you to care about them and make them feel better and make them feel good? And the thing about emotional intelligence, I totally agree, because ultimately how we feel is 10 times more important than what we know. And I always look at smokers. I've never met a dumb smoker. I've never met a smoker who said, I wasn't aware of the health risks of smoking, and now that I'm aware of them, I'm going to go ahead and put out the cigarette forever. You know, every smoker I've ever met knows the health risks of smoking. They chose to do it anyway because of the way it made them feel, right? They got accepted into the club. It made them feel more grown up. It made them feel sexy. It made them feel more of a man. However, it came down to a feeling.
Yeah. I agree with you 100%. John Maxwell's quote is, nobody cares how much you know until they know how much you care. And that's completely true. Why is it so difficult for us? It's so simple. Every book, whether you read Tony Robbins, Peter Drucker, Ken Blanchard, Patrick Lencioni, I don't care who you read, Jim Collins, you'll realize that all these guys are saying the same thing. We need to make it about other people. We need to treat them in a certain way. We need to learn to connect. And when we do that, we win, hands down, whether they're employees or customers. It's simple. And instead of blaming millennials, let's start teaching them how to do that, how to use great tools like asking questions, to deliver value, right? To really understand what your customer wants from you or your boss wants from you. Let's teach those skills. How about a year's worth of question asking skills, right?
So, I like it.
Or
I like
learning,
it.
Or reading a book each month, right? You know, testing and proving. Like I said, millennials want all the things that great leaders do to manage millennials. They're one and the same. So, I mean, they're four simple things. Millennials want to learn and grow. Great leaders that manage well are teachers, and they grow their team, right?
Right.
Millennials want authenticity. They want to be told the truth because they've been so bombarded with nonsense and bull, okay? Great leaders implicitly create trust, and that's how they lead, through trust and through creating relationships, same thing, right? Millennials want feedback, and some people will say they want it 24/7. Well, great leaders, they know how to give feedback and communicate. That's what they do all day. That's their job, to manage, to lead, to teach through feedback. And then millennials want purpose. They say, you know, they want more than us, and they want to do good, and they want to help others. Well, what's wrong with that? But we know that caring leadership or servant leadership or however, whatever you want to coin it, is the same philosophy. It's about giving back. We're not far apart at all. We're just standing in our own way, not communicating very clearly on how to do that, and mostly because of time, right?
Right.
This stuff takes
right.
time.
Well,
caring. Yeah.
And I think that, like all great conflicts, right, you know, people are saying the same thing, but for whatever reason, both sides aren't quite hearing it, right? They're just, you know – you see this in every relationship where both parties are saying the same thing, kind of, and, you know, it's fairly close, but it means something different. And like you said, we're pretty close. We really do want the same things. You know what? Let me ask you this, because
right.
we're running short
sure.
on time, but I want to get your thoughts on this. In your experience, what are the top three skills millennials lack in the workplace? I want to get your thoughts on this.
Yeah, I would say this, you know, It relates to how we were as parents. We've been in the cure business. Seth Godin says, you know, we've cured all their problems instead of teaching them through telling stories, because we didn't want them to have one bit of pain more than we had. And as a generation of parents, we really kind of screwed them up like that. And so this resilience and this becoming the mentor for yourself, the learning how to fish, the skills of asking questions, right, and being thoughtful and leaning in and making it about others, those simple things. So, you know, if I had to rank it, when people say to me, what are the things a millennial needs to learn most, the first thing I say is how to ask great questions. Because if you can ask great questions that are other-focused of how to solve things and making it about others, you're going to be able to win every single time, because that will demonstrate that you're caring, right? So and then the other things relate to really learning how to shift mindset at all times. So, for example, I hate my boss. They suck. Versus what can I do to shift to change my relationship with my boss? Because the only person I can change is myself. And if I try and I could see how much I can eke out of getting better, then I've grown. And so I'm good. Right? Instead of blaming it all on having a horrible boss. Right?
Yes.
And by the way, if you can do that, your boss will shift. Right? And so...
Absolutely. Here's the great thing about it. Here's the other thing. If for whatever reason it doesn't work out between you and your boss, because you've grown, you'll probably grow into a different position. You'll grow into a different company. You'll
yeah.
grow into a different opportunity. So either way, I think your mindset, your suggestion to change and grow and be better is ultimately the answer, no matter which way they go.
Here's the deal. Here's what I tell every millennial that we coach, and I love millennials. I consider myself a perennial millennial, and I tell them this. If you can do that mindset shift, here's what's going to happen for you, both personally and professionally. You'll get the guy or girl. You'll get the promotion. You'll get the job, and you'll get the customer, right? And you'll be giving all along. What's wrong with those four things if you can really learn to shift your mindset to make it about other people? And that's what we have to teach all young adults, and we've had to teach them that since Socrates and Plato, right?
I love it. Dan, we're going to end on that note because we're out of time, but it's been a blast having you on the show. I'd love to bring you back and talk more about millennial the book again is Chasing Relevance: Six Steps to Understand, Engage, and Maximize Next Generation Leaders in the Workplace. The author, Dan Negroni. Thank you again, Dan, for stopping by today.
Thank you, Bert. Appreciate the time.
Yeah. All right, good stuff there. Great, great way to start the show. A lot of good nuggets there of useful information, right? Bite-sized nuggets, as the show intro talks about, something that you can apply to all of your employees. We're going to take a bit of a break here, and then we'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Oh, hey, we're back. Sorry about the dead air. I'm thinking here I am, jibber-jabbering, and I forgot to press the mighty, powerful on button. So anyway, listen, just wanted to mention this real quick because, again, I get this question quite a bit. So I wanted to mention this. I got a message from, Adam from Instagram, and he was talking about how to make money on social media, or better yet, with social media. And so I wanted to kind of go over my steps for this. And for many years, and I think for the most part, most people will struggle to make money with social media. It's gotten this weird rep. And so what I mean by that is, the idea is that you put out all this great value and content on social media, and people will find you on social media and therefore do business with you on social, via social media. Eventually they'll find you, they'll reach out to you, they'll go to your website, and they'll start doing business with you. And that's, for the most part, is a big myth. It's a big lie. And most people that try to tell you that you can make money on social media, they got like a 10-week course for a couple thousand dollars and how you can make money on social media. Well, guess what? They sell that course not on social media, but through advertising. Look, social media should be about 3 to maybe 5% of your marketing. And it should be kind of like the last resorts. So here's the deal. If you're thinking that you're going to make money with social media, you're going to be disappointed. If you're wondering why you haven't made money with social media and you've been putting out all this great content, it's because it's not made to work that way. So here's a great example. Think of a great book that you read, maybe a really good magazine article, something along those lines, and how many times have you read a great book or read a great article or even blog, and you said, man, this is fantastic. I love this book. I love this article. I love this blog post. Let me call the author right now and start doing business with them. Most people answer they've never done that. I think right now the survey stands something like at 1% of the people have done that. 1%. And so bottom line is, you got to put a lot of energy into social media and get very little results. If you want instant results, that's called marketing/advertising. Specifically, a direct response type ad will get you instant results. So to give you an example, Coke is the real thing. I know I'm dating myself by saying that, but Coke is the real thing, is an image ad not geared for direct response. Buy Coke, buy three cases of Coke for $10 is asking you for a direct response. Either you're going to say yes or no. Either way, there's a result there. There is a response that a trackable event's going to happen. So bottom line is, look, if you want to make money with social media, here's how I do it. I only connect with people that are my ideal clients. Then I will send them a relevant post or video. And then I will ask them to do business with me. Isn't that crazy? So if you can help people lose weight, then send them some relevant information and then offer them a way to do business with you. And I call this a soft offer. Simply say, hey, I have a free report, a free ebook, a free course on how you can lose weight during the holidays. Opt in here. Go to my website and get it here for free. And they go to your website and they put their name and their email address, and that's how they start doing business with you. Or maybe you have a report or a free video or something to help them how to market their business, how to, increase their relevance on LinkedIn, how to keep their plants alive. But sooner or later, the fastest, easiest way to do anything with social media is to ask. All right. Thank you, Adam, for that question. And we're going to get this party started with Michael. And Carrie, I apologize. Carrie, there was some mix-up. And so quick shout-out to Carrie. Thank you so much. But if you'll contact Amy, we'll reschedule you for another time. There was some mix-up on today's show or something. But either way, we have Michael on the show, and we're going to get started with Michael here. Michael Ayalon, and I hope I got that last name right. Michael Ayalon is the CEO of Greek University, an educational platform that inspires countless universities across North America in identifying, understanding, and resolving current social issues. As a successful motivational speaker, entrepreneur, Mike has headlined over 300 presentations across 100 college campuses, as well as corporate events to bring light on pressing problems such as sexual assault prevention, hazing prevention, and campus safety, alcohol and drug abuse, strategies for managerial excellence and diversity in student organizations. Mike Ayalon, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thanks so much for having me, Bert. I appreciate that.
You bet. And just so we're clear, did I get your last name close? Is it Ayalon or Ayalon?
Yes, it's Ayalon. You got it perfectly the first time.
All right. Fantastic. I love when that happens. And so, Lyle, let me ask you this. Here you are. The name of your company is Greek University. And so tell us a little bit about what Greek University does.
Sure, of course. I travel the country and I speak to college students and we talk about all the social issues that are going on their campus, and I show the students how to overcome those issues. So right now on college campuses, you really have the big three. You have sexual assault prevention, you have hazing prevention, and alcohol and drug abuse prevention. Those three are the real major issues that are facing college students today. And so I'll go in and we'll talk about those issues in big public forums. And we'll talk about some of the definitions. So if we're talking about sexual assault, you know, what is the definition of rape versus sexual assault? Many students don't know what the difference is. We'll talk about the law and how that applies to the students themselves. And we'll get into things like consent culture and how we create that on a college campus. And then also bystander intervention, how to do something about it if you see something that's wrong. And then we'll also just go into some various best practices that I see on college campuses all across the country so I can show the students what actually works on different college campuses, and then they can actually implement that and create an awareness event themselves, which would be peer-to-peer education, so that way they actually become part of the solution instead of part of the problem.
Gotcha. I love that. You know, now I want to get your thoughts on this. I don't know if you've seen this. I saw this. Was it yesterday or was it last week? It's all a big blur. But there's an app for that now. Speaking of
yes.
Consent culture, Did you see this thing? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I read a little bit about it. I haven't actually downloaded the app yet, so I'm curious to download that. I think I'll do that within the next couple of days here. But, you know, technology, all the students, they don't leave their classroom, they don't leave their bedroom, they don't leave their dorm without their phone. So I think whatever we can do in order to automate some of these things and make it easier for them to comply, to report, I think is a great thing. So I have yet to see it, but I'm all in favor of it.
Yeah, I think it's kind of an interesting idea, and certainly if it's used, I think it's a great step in the right direction.
Absolutely.
I think it's go ahead.
Yeah, I think we can agree that it would be impractical to actually come about with a contract, for example, when two people decide that they want to take this relationship further. I know there are some funny parodies and things like that that Dave Chappelle had put together years ago on that. But if there is an app that makes that process a little bit easier, a little bit less awkward, then I'm all for it.
I don't know if it'll make it less awkward, but I think it will streamline it, you know, thumbprint here, sign here, you know, I don't know. I don't think that's going to make it less awkward, but at least it might keep some people out of jail, and maybe it'll give a little pause for a worthy cause, kind of a moment, a little time of reflection. So I'm all for it. I think it's going to be interesting to see what the data brings out. But I want to talk about this because, Michael, you're about helping people network, specifically networking to unlock your potential to land the job or client you deserve. And so I want to talk about that. And first, I want to start us off by kind of giving us your definition. What is networking?
I'm glad you asked. Networking is really a deliberate process where people exchange information, they exchange resources, support, and access in such a way to create mutually beneficial relationships for personal and professional success. And note that I said mutually beneficial relationships. I think that's the key to networking right there. It can't be a one-way street. It has to be that two people are actively looking to help each other.
Yeah, I like that. I like that emphasis on mutual because what I have noticed, and I want to get your take on this, when I go to a networking meeting, it seems like everybody's there to sell, but nobody's there to buy.
Right.
And I've kind of stopped going to a lot of networking meetings because of that reason. It's all self-centered.
Right. Yeah, I totally understand that, and I think really what I teach college students is how to go to these networking meetings with certain goals in mind, and I think that you really just have to help. That is the key. That's the key to my success. Greek University is actually the third entrepreneurial organization that I've built in my lifetime. One of the companies I've worked on went from startups over $25 million in annual sales. And so I think in building companies like that, networking is so important. And I think that you really just have to go with a goal in mind and look to help. If you just go with that mindset that you're just there to help, ultimately it's going to come back to you in spades. One of my prior companies, I remember I was a web designer and I also did some search engine optimization. And so I went to a meeting, this was years and years ago, went to a networking meeting and they asked if I would be willing to come up and talk about search engine optimization and show other business owners how to get to the top of Google naturally instead of paying pay-per-click. And so I did that free willing. I just showed them exactly the techniques that I used to get to the top of Google, and I gave all the information away. And at the end of the meeting, I ended up getting more clients than I could possibly handle because they said, you know what, if there was a guy who had his own landscaping business, he said, you know what, that was great information. I love seeing how you can manipulate the search engines. But at the end of the day, this guy said to me, I'm just a landscaper. And so I want to focus my time there. I'm just going to hire you to do the search engine optimization for me. So I think if you go with that mindset of just helping other people, it's going to come back to you in spades.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And if we have time, I'm going to circle back to that in my experience giving away for free and getting more clients out of it. But I want to talk about this. I want to talk about what you've seen. What are some of the misconceptions of networking?
Of course. So, you know, I think a lot of people say to me, for example, you know, I do a good job. I really shouldn't have to network. But the reality is that smart employees today, they use networking to stay in touch with their customers, with their suppliers, and networking also alerts them to problems before they get out of hand. And it also helps people spot emerging needs. So I think that's really important. People, just like you were talking about before, I've had people come up to me and say, well, I tried networking, a month ago, but it doesn't really work. The reality is to cultivate a big network, it takes months, maybe even years. So what people need to understand about networking is that you can't microwave a relationship for 30 seconds. Networking is a long-term process. So you have to be committed to that process. I've also had people, even VP level, they'll say to me, well, networking is fine for junior folks who are struggling to climb the ladder, but I don't need to network anymore because now I've achieved VP. The reality is, no matter what your title is, and my title happens to be CEO, you never outgrow the need to network, because networking is the best way to benchmark yourself against other people in that position, check out best practices, and also compare yourself with those above you. Some people will say to me, well, Mike, networking is manipulative. They say, I don't like the idea of arm-twisting somebody to do something for me. And that's true. You can't exploit other people and expect to build a long-term relationship. I think the way that you avoid manipulation is to give more than you receive, and that's kind of what I was talking about earlier. Some people find networking to be just boring and uncomfortable. They feel like I'm just schmoozing other people. But I think people can really learn how to go beyond the chit-chat and then into conversations that can help to solve problems, come up with new ideas, and also access valuable resources.
Yeah, I love that. Those are some really good ideas. And the thing about it is, back to what you're saying, some of these people who are saying, "Hey, I'm too big. I don't need to network anymore." You know, talk about, I don't know, a little bit of pride there, maybe a lot of pride. I mean, you always need to network, right? I mean,
yep.
It doesn't matter who you are. You can always use a little bit more. Here you are. You're the CEO. So networking to you may not be getting a job, but it certainly would be getting a client, getting a speaking engagement, maybe connecting with somebody that you do a joint venture with down the road.
Absolutely. I've had so many of those joint ventures that you're talking about just come about, and I'm not looking for a job, but suddenly you might find a connection with somebody else at that networking meeting that you never in a million years would have ever imagined. But if you're not asking people at that networking meeting, how can I help you, and listening, being an active listener, and then figuring out how you can partner with them in order to make that happen, that's where the real gold is at.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, let's talk about this. So if I'm looking for a dream job, where should I look to network?
Well, I think there are a lot of different places that you can network. You can network at work. You can network at home with family and friends. There's lots of different membership organizations. So if you're a member of a fraternity, a sorority, something like that, they have different networking organizations and networking meetings. In every city, you can just use Google and go to eventbrite.com or meetup.com and just use Google to find these networking organizations. They exist in every city in the United States. You can also, if you have a university that's close to your location, visit their career service center. There are professional associations out there. Every town has a chamber of commerce. I would suggest that people visit their chamber, volunteer groups. No matter what your hobby, health, or sports activities, those are places where you can network, and even religious organizations. So I think that there are a lot of different areas in everybody's community. They just haven't really thought about it from a networking standpoint.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. And you know what? And what's interesting to me is that we've all heard the adage. It's all about the people you know, right? It's right. Who knows you and who you know that help you, you know, fix a problem, get a job, get an interview, get ahead. We've all heard that. And it's so funny that people are so weird about networking.
Right. Yeah, people really hesitate to network, but I think that's really what you're trying to build. You're trying to build that top-of-the-mind awareness. So that way, if I was in the web design business, that people say, you know what, I have to get this lead over to Mike because that's what he does best, And I know that he's going to expertly serve this particular customer. And I'm not going to lose any face by giving this recommendation to Mike, because I know he's going to serve them perfectly. He's going to give them a great product at a fair price. And I know he's going to handle it the right way. And so you have to build that top of the mind awareness with everybody in your network. So that way, as soon as that lead comes across their desk, they immediately know, oh, I have to get this to Mike. So that's really what you're trying to build, that top of the mind awareness. And so you really do have to stay on top of people in your network. And not physically, but I'm talking about through email, through social media, through email blasts and things like that, to stay in front of them on a regular basis. So that way, even if they don't have a lead for you today, you want that top-of-the-mind awareness. So a week later, when they meet somebody who's looking for a website, they immediately think it's got to go to Mike.
Yep, I like that. I like that. Talk about this. Talk about what a USP is and how to use that in a networking situation.
Absolutely. So really, when we start talking about a USP, that's really a unique selling proposition. And that means that you need to have about 12 words that are ready to roll off your tongue when you meet somebody, because you know that the questions you're going to get when you meet somebody for the first time, it's always the same. It's, you know, who are you, what do you do, and what are we going to talk about? Those are the three questions. So have your USP, your unique selling proposition, ready before you go and memorize it. So for me, my USP is I empower and motivate college students to create safer communities and help them attract more quality leaders to their organizations than they can possibly handle. And so when you hear that as a student administrator or even a student looking to grow your organization, you immediately go, wow, this is the person that I've been waiting to meet. So no matter what it is your business is, your unique selling proposition is going to be that you help some target market solve some problem. So you have to figure out who your target market is and how you're going to solve their problem, and that becomes your USP. You have to know it off the top of your head, because you know that question is coming in the networking meeting.
Yeah, and I think you're so right there. The worst thing you can do in a networking situation is somebody says, hey, Bert or Mike, what do you do? Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about yourself. And you're going, I'm kind of just here, and I'm not really sure, and blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden, forget it. You just lost them. This could have been
Absolutely.
Your ideal client, but since you weren't ready, you weren't prepared, you weren't practiced or rehearsed, mm-hmm. you missed the connection.
That's right. You got to practice that USP. And one other little tip I'll have for you is bring a success story with you, because you and I both know when we go to these networking meetings, people always say to you, oh, so what's new? And the worst thing you can possibly say is, oh, nothing much. That's the worst answer you can give. So instead of going with that, come up with some success story. So for me, when I was in the web design business, I would talk about some success story where this lady, she contacts me out of the blue off my website. She wants to get her dog in commercial. She thinks her dog is the it dog for commercial. And so I was able to, within 2 weeks, get her to the top of Google for the term dog actor using some really basic search engine optimization techniques. And she got a commercial for Macy's. And so now when you go to her website, she's got the Macy's commercial with her dog on the homepage. And so that is a success story that you can use over and over again, if I was in the web design business, to talk about something great that happened. So have that story ready. So when somebody says to you, what's new, you can go, hey, you wouldn't believe what happened to me. Listen to the story about a dog actor. And so whatever your business is, make sure you have that ready to go.
I like this. I like this because that's a great response to so many questions. I mean, hey, what's going on, or what's
right.
new, or, you know, tell me a little bit about yourself. And if all of a sudden you can come back with a success story like that, that is engaging. It's impressive. It's a great way to have people learn about you without necessarily telling them about you.
That's right.
I love it. I love it. Speaking of success stories, Mike, so you've been doing this for a while. Do you have any of your own success stories, interesting stories about networking meetings that have turned into major successes, opportunities, sales?
Sure. I mean, I've had many of them personally. And so, but rather than talk about me, I like to talk about some examples of some other big companies out there that have used these types of things in order to make some major companies. So one example is DreamWorks Studio. And we've all heard about their studio. They made some major films out there. that whole studio started from a 1994 White House state dinner for Russian President Boris Yeltsin, and three of the guests at that White House state dinner was Geffen, Spielberg, and Katzenberg. They were seated at the same table. They began talking about starting a new movie studio together, and the result was DreamWorks Studios. And so how did that do, that networking chance meeting? It produced more than 10 films with box office grosses of more than $100 million each, with movies like Saving Private Ryan, Gladiator, Shrek, Castaway, A Beautiful Mind, Catch Me If You Can. All of that came about from a networking meeting. Another example, a little known fact, Mayor Booker, he's from Newark, New Jersey. He ended up meeting Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook in July of 2010, because they attended a dinner at a conference in Sun Valley, Idaho. And they were seated at the same table as each other, and Zuckerberg, who had no known ties whatsoever to Newark, New Jersey, announced in September of 2010 that he was donating $100 million of his personal fortune to the Newark school system, all because of a chance networking meeting. Another example a lot of people don't even really know about, a date with Oprah in the 1980s. Oprah and Roger Ebert, of course, of the movie fame, they actually went out on a date in the 1980s. And they went to a movie. Afterwards, they went to the Hamburger Hamlet for dinner. And Roger Ebert, actually, it was his treat. He picked up the tab for Oprah. And Oprah, over, you know, eating hamburgers, basically said to Roger Ebert, she said, "I don't know what to do. ABC stations, they want to syndicate my show. So does King World. And the problem with syndication is that if the show isn't successful, you're off the air in 3 months. But the ABC stations, they own themselves, so they can keep you on." And she was asking Roger Ebert which way she should go. And so Roger Ebert takes out a napkin and a pen, and he makes a few calculations. Number one, how much he made a year for doing a syndicated show. Then times two, because Siskel, his partner, made the same. Then times two, because Oprah's on for an hour instead of his half-hour show. Then times five, because she's on 5 days a week. And then times two, because her ratings would be at least twice as big as Siskel and Ebert. And then Roger took this napkin, pushed it over to Oprah, and Oprah takes a look at his calculations, and she says, "Raj, I'm going with King World." And so now, of course, Oprah's worth $2.9 billion. So it's like these little chance meetings that you never know. I'll give you one final example. Everybody's heard of the "I'm going to Disneyland" ad that appears in the Super Bowl. And nobody really knows the story of how that came about. And what happened was Disney CEO Michael Eisner and his wife Jane, during the 1987 grand opening for the Star Tours attraction at Disneyland, went to dinner with Dick Rattan and Gina Yeager, who in December of 1986, they had piloted the first aircraft to fly around the world without stopping or refueling. And so Jane asked what the pilots planned to do next now that they've flown around the world without stopping or refueling. And they said, "Well, we're going to Disneyland." And so weeks later, Disney launches the series following the Super Bowl in January 1987 with a commercial featuring New York Giants quarterback Phil Simms. So, you know, it's just, you know, these chance things, these chance opportunities, you really never know who you're going to meet and how you're going to be able to move your business forward based on the needs of somebody else.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love it. You know what? It's been such a, we'd call it a great conversation, Michael, spending this time with you. I hope that our audience gets as many ideas as I have. This is just wonderful information. And as I said earlier, I wanted to come back and circle or back to what you started at the top of the segment when you said, when you talked about giving it away for free. So many years ago, I want to say about 25 years ago, there is this guy on TV. His name is Tony Robbins, and he's, you know, he's been on the air for a while. He's talking about his tape. So this dates me a little bit. And this is back with the Personal Power 30-Day Success. I think it's what it was, but it was tapes. And I was thinking about buying them, and, you know, and I wasn't really sure. I don't know who this Tony Robbins guy is. Anyway, one of my friends had bought the tapes, and he said, "Oh, you can have them. You can take them, borrow them, bring them back when you're done."
Mm-hmm.
So I take these tapes, and I'm into, I think, day number two or number three. You know, it's like tape number four, and I pick up the phone, and I call my order in, and I pay so I can have my own copy of these Tony Robbins tapes. My point being, kind of like your point was, when you give, you know, just giving away
information, giving away maybe some of your choices, how-tos, does not all of a sudden make your market disappear. It doesn't mean that people aren't going to buy from you. In some cases, they're going to buy more from you because they trust you. And giving them a chance to see what your stuff's all about is kind of like an hors d'oeuvre.
Absolutely. I mean, I was giving away the secrets to SEO. I was showing them how I actually manipulated the search engine. I was giving them the secret sauce in a networking meeting. And they said, you know what, this is way too complicated. I'm going to stick to what I do best, but I'm going to hire you, and you're going to be with me for the next 20 years. And that company is still getting those results. So I think, yeah, people should not be afraid of helping other people and giving stuff away for free, because if they get real value from whatever it is that you're giving away for free, there's almost like an obligation to hire you and to pay you for that, because you got some real benefit out of it. And I think that's just how human nature works.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mike, Michael, thank you so much for stopping by. If you want to find out more about Michael Ayalon, you can go to GreekUniversity.org, GreekUniversity.org, and find out more about Michael there, about his speaking opportunities for your organization, unlocking your potential to land the job or client you deserve. Michael Ayalon, thank you so much for stopping by today.
Thanks, Bert. It was a pleasure. Anytime you need me, let me know.
All righty. Good stuff there. I hope that you guys have enjoyed today's show as much as we have enjoyed bringing it to you. Just a lot of great, useful information, some great strategies, some great ideas for both your employees as well as for your business. As always, remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch, and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.